Welcome to Stepping Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host, where every week we share true stories of people that have overcome, for the most part, substance abuse, but the great news is they've triumphed over it, and now they're in recovery. And the very young and very impressive gentleman I'm about to introduce has certainly overcome adversity in his life. His name is Justin Luke Riley, and he's now the president and CEO of Young People in Recovery. They're a grassroots organization, and they focus on peer-to-peer services for young people who are seeking recovery from substance abuse. Their aim, and they're successful at it, is to improve access to treatment, educational resources, which so many people need, employment opportunities, and housing that will help and sustain young people in recovery. They have over 100 chapters nationwide, and they're growing, and they're awesome. So let me give you their website. It's youngpeopleinrecovery.org, and you can go on there, like their Facebook page, follow them on Twitter, and all the other good things, because they're opening up chapters all over, and they do lots of cool things for young people in recovery. And even if you're a parent, you might want to check it out, too, if you're concerned or any loved one or friend, if you're concerned of somebody who's young and needs help. Justin, I'm so impressed. He's only 28 years old, but he's been in long-term recovery for, 9 years now. So that's very young. So, Justin, welcome to Stepping Out Radio.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show today. You guys do just phenomenal work. I know that you consistently lift up those stories of triumph, and I'm humbled to be amongst many great people that can and do recover. So thank you again.
Yes, and your story is really quite a story because you're still so young, and that's such a hopeful message to put out there for everybody to hear. So usually on Stepping Out, we begin at the beginning. So Justin, can you just tell us how your beginning started from your birth and on?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a person that believes that everybody has kind of a set of filters, and depending on their life experiences and how they hear things and perceive things can greatly impact how they operate within the world. Really starting as early as it gets in life. I was actually adopted at the age of 14 months, and for me, my filter heard that I was kind of tried out for 14 months, found not good enough, and operated out of that mode for a very long time.
How old were you when your folks told you you were adopted?
So I grew up knowing that I was adopted, but for whatever reason, even though they were very, very clear that, you know, my birth parents did it for all the right reasons, you know, I had done nothing wrong as being, you know, such a, you know, young 14-month-old baby, of course I couldn't make any mistakes. But for whatever reason, my filter just really reaffirmed that regardless of even the evidence or all of the information at hand, that I just wasn't good enough, and I just didn't like who I was.
Now, were you the only child, or did your parents adopt other children, or did they have any biological children, or what was your...
I have a sister, and she's also adopted. She was adopted right at birth, and so for me, that was, again, kind of further evidence surrounding, well, clearly that was a plan all along, because, you know, she was adopted right away, and, you know, they kept me for 14 months and decided not to keep me. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just one of those things that I use, not so much as a crutch, just as kind of a subconscious default setting of never being good enough for myself.
And you're being so honest, and I really appreciate that. Yes, and anybody out there, you know, could certainly relate to that, especially in a young person's mind. I mean, we don't know what your biological parent situation was. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out if you ever met them. Maybe we won't in the story. But okay, so that sets the stage of you feeling a little different or, you know, a little bit unloved. So, but how did your childhood years go? You know, your elementary school years, for a better term.
Yeah, I mean, with that kind of consistently operating in the background, it made me kind of live towards two extremes, which I can still be, you know, an individual with extreme personality, whether it's for good or for not so good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, elementary, middle school, high school, all throughout, I mean, I either was, you know, captain of the tennis team or the guy in school suspension, and really nowhere in between. And so I really operated out of the, you know, how do I prove to myself and everybody else that I'm good enough, or how do I almost reaffirm the fact that I'm not good enough and make some poor choices?
That's very intuitive. Okay, so you said you were captain of the tennis team, but then there were times that you weren't. Did you start drinking at a young age?
Yeah, so I really started experimenting with how do I feel different than I feel kind of at a baseline setting, or how do I just get through the day because I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I tried that early on with simple things just like Benadryl when I was in elementary school, and then through middle school and high school, experimented with other drugs like alcohol. And, you know, those are kind of, you know, I'm sure you've had people talk about, you know, liquid courage or the bravery to get through the day. And that was very much my experience.
Right. So did you drink a lot through the middle school and high school years, or were you still like an athlete where you were excelling in tennis, or you were able to do both because you were young?
Yeah, I would say for me, it was definitely a both proposition.
Okay.
I was able to, I mean, because it's all relative, right? I mean, my story, as unique to me as it may be, you know, people have, you know, much different circumstances or drink or misuse other drugs and alcohol in different manners than I did. But for me, I consumed a lot of life, whatever that was, mm-hmm. and I was able to succeed in athletics and academically, and then also succeed, if you will, in doing a lot of research of how not to use different substances, so to speak.
Right. So your home life, though, was okay. I mean, in your mind, you were saddened because you were given up for adoption at 14 months. But was your home life in your nuclear family with your sister and you a nice one? Or
yeah, my parents are epic. I mean, seriously, okay. they gave me anything and everything I ever wanted, uh-huh. not just like stuff, but opportunity. I mean, you could not find a set of parents who believed more in both of their children and did everything that they could to set them up for success. Anything from, you know, showing up to baseball games to, you know, helping us study to taking us on trips to showing us, you know, the importance of giving back and volunteering in communities. And, I mean, really, for all intents and purposes, a great example of an all-American family. And that's something that isn't, again, unique. Many, so to speak, all-American families have individuals, if not multiple individuals, that are impacted by mental health or substance use disorders, you know?
Oh, for
I know you know that.
Yeah,
so.
No, for sure. We hear it. And that's, you know, that's another reason why we're, you know, proud to do the show and bring stories like this, because there is that stigma of, oh, well, you have to be, you know, living in a downtrodden trailer to have this happen to you. And it's so the opposite. I mean, of course it happens there too, but it happens everywhere. And I think that's also what's happening now across the country with the crisis with opioid addiction, that it is affecting, you know, everybody, young and even not so young.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we continue to see time and time again, not only does addiction not discriminate, but neither does recovery, as long as somebody's given an opportunity to access some very crucial recovery supports in order for them to at least have the opportunity to maintain or enter into their long-term recovery to begin with.
Sure. So back to your middle school and high school years, since you got sober relatively young, I'm assuming things got relatively bad in those years. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, my one, if I used to have a life word, it would just be extreme in every aspect. And so whether we talk about the extreme success academically, athletically, which is still relative, because, I mean, I went to a regular public high school. It's not like I had to drop out of public high school because I was so talented at sports or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the substance misuse, you know, it became something that, for me, since I didn't feel, you know, comfortable in my own skin on a daily basis, the solution was obviously participate in these activities on a daily basis to overcome what it would look like so I could feel okay about myself.
And we're going to find out what happened. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm talking to Justin Luke Riley, who's telling us his story. He's from youngpeopleinrecovery.org. Check it out. And we'll be back. I'm Denise McEntee, your host of Steppin' Out Radio. Please check us out at steppingoutradio.com. Sign up for our podcast, but we also have a new mobile app that has stories, great stories like Justin's and celebrities and sports figures and lawyers and doctors and everybody in between that you can carry with you and listen to 24/7. And it's available on your iPhone and Android. And if you go to the Apple Store, it's Stepping Out Radio. So check that out. Sign up for our free newsletter, and then you'll hear all sorts of upcoming stories and what we're up to. Go to steppingoutradio.com. But right now I'm talking to such an impressive 28-year-old young man, Justin Luke Riley, who serves as the president and CEO of a really cool national grassroots organization, again, called Young People in Recovery. And please check them out at youngpeopleinrecovery.org. And before we left for the break, Justin was telling us that he was a young person of extremes. He either was, you know, the president and captain of his tennis team, or he was maybe not doing what he was supposed to, which happens. And you also were saying that you felt a little bit different because of your situation of being adopted. But lead us up to how you eventually realized you needed to stop whatever substances you were doing. What were those years like?
I think the best way that I could describe some of the lowest points for me was just solitude. I mean, I didn't feel like I fit into my, you know, nuclear family. I didn't feel like I fit into anybody at school. I mean, I just didn't fit in. I didn't even fit in by myself, so to speak, just, you know, being alone. Mm-hmm. And so
so you isolated a lot? You isolated a lot?
Oh, yeah. Isolation for me was very much a nightly ritual. Okay. And a retreat, for
right.
sure.
Now, I'm going to ask you a personal question, and you don't have to answer if you don't want. Did you ever meet your biological parents, or did you ever ask your adopted parents? Because I'm wondering if that would have got you some kind of peace, or that never happened.
Oh, no, it's actually really interesting you mentioned that. I most recently, like here, literally within the last, 6 weeks, have decided to pursue finding out more information about my birth parents. So, which I guess now the term of the times, if you will, are my first parents, right? Like, I was used to always calling them my birth parents, but I guess that community has done their own advocacy, and they really consider themselves first parents, which I think is kind of cool.
That is cool, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually literally in the middle of that journey right now.
Well, good luck.
And frankly, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, that's, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20, but to me, that's still kind of a roll of the dice, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have found out some more pertinent information or a different type of information, maybe that would have, quote unquote, helped. But I don't know, because my parents always told me that my birth parents did it because they cared about me, and I loved my parents. I loved my family. I never wanted to not be adopted.
Sure.
It was just such a battle of myself. More than anything.
And I think, you know, I have lots of friends that were adopted. I think it's, you know, it's common to a lot of people. I don't know if you've seen, there's a cable show, I think, or maybe it's not even cable, where they help people find their adoptive parents. Have you ever seen that?
No, I actually haven't.
Yeah, you would find it really interesting. That's why I'm mentioning it. I will,
yeah.
You know, when we go off the air, I'll email it to you. I'll look it up, but I watch it often,
cool.
And it's very interesting. But anyway, back to, okay, so you isolated, and that was a big deal. You were alone. So when you were isolating, this is in the high school years, were you drinking at night to numb
yep.
the pain by yourself?
Yeah.
By yourself?
Yep. Yes, indeed. I wasn't even, you know, you would have, again, going to that, that word of extreme, if you would have asked, you know, half of my peer group, or friends, if you will, hey, does this, you know, is Justin an athlete or is he a guy that parties? You would get two different answers all the time because I either was the athlete or even when I did drink, it certainly wasn't at parties because I was an athlete and I was in advanced placement classes and, you know, you can't do both, so to speak, but I always tried to. So
right.
It was a very private thing.
Okay. Did your folks know? Did your parents know, you think, or?
They, as soon as they did know, they absolutely sprang into action as rock star parents trying to help me get whatever I needed. And
was alcohol your only problem? Did you dabble in marijuana or any other drugs?
You know, I did try a myriad of different substances, but really for me, again, it really came down to the relief, not so much the strategy to get the relief. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense, yeah. You kind of just wanted to, and we hear it a lot, just kind of check out, you know, from the way you felt, which is common. So, okay, so when, and let me ask you something. You're obviously very, very intelligent. Did you think you had a problem, or you weren't sure, or you were in total denial?
It went through different phases. I mean, up until, you know, elementary to, I would say, junior year in high school, I didn't think twice about it because it wasn't a conscious activity. I didn't know what was happening or even conscious of it. All I knew was the same way that I tried to excel at sports and did, or tried to excel at extracurricular activities and did, was because I was trying to figure out a way to feel better. And for me, as maybe as a potential misnomer for so many individuals that can't really personally relate, tennis and drinking every day and doing student council and, you know, trying out for cross country and doing all that was all the same category for me. Those were all examples of if I do X, Y, and Z or A, B, and C, whether it was alcohol or teaching tennis, I'm just looking for ways to make myself feel better. And so it wasn't a very conscious, like, wow, I think I'm developing a problem. I was just trying to find solutions, you know?
Sure. I get it. Absolutely. So you got sober at 19. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Which, congratulations. That is really impressive. So what happened between the years of 18 and the year of 18 to 19, you know, that last year?
That was absolutely some of the most formative years, not only for my recovery, but for my entire life. I mean, from 18 to 19, I think I entered into 6 of the 7 treatment programs that I did in my early recovery journey.
So tell us the day that you went into your first recovery. Who discovered it? Did you go to your parents and say, help, I'm not handling this? Did your parents notice it? How did you first get into that first recovery treatment?
So for me, trying to get into recovery and then also entering treatment, a little bit of a nuance there.
Mm-hmm.
I tried sincerely on my own, alone, as I often did, tried to stop drinking and couldn't. And that kind of escalated, obviously, into a pattern of not being able to stop. But then entering into my first type of treatment program was actually, and I'm thinking, because, you know, obviously these are not very clear years for me.
Right.
But the first time or way I got there, I would assume resulted in one of my first suicide attempts, along with alcohol consumption and probably some of my prescription pills, and then into a psychiatric facility. Maybe there was even some police involved, but the point is my parents at that time, they tried to really, you know, connect me to whether it was my primary care doc or different recovery communities or even the local church at that time. But, like, it wasn't like a really clear movie moment of, you know, I show up, I empty a bottle of alcohol,
and they
drive me to a 30-day program, and I've been, you know, doing the deal ever since.
Got it. Well, we're going to find out. Thank God you weren't successful in your suicide attempt, and not only you're such an example of, somebody that truly turned their life around. I'm Denise McEntee. You're listening to Stepping Out Radio. We'll be back with more of Justin Luke's story up next. Back here. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, True Stories of Addiction and Recovery. And we were just speaking, and we're going to continue to speak to Justin Luke Riley, who is the president and CEO of a cool organization called Young People in Recovery. It's grassroots. It's over 100 chapters and growing. And you can check them out at youngpeopleinrecovery.org. And before the break, Justin was telling us that he had a failed, thank God, suicide attempt, and he went to different rehabs and, you know, give us a little bit of background of that and then how it finally clicked for you.
Really for me, after the first treatment and the in and out aspect came from just sincere attempts at trying to find what was going to work for me, whether it was through different mentors, coaches, peers, beliefs, principles. I mean, I learned a lot in a lot of those different places. But for me, where it really clicked was at my seventh treatment center, when I really heard a message of hope from another young man who was in long-term recovery and was a volunteer from the outside and reminded me of the intrinsic value I had. And one day I would actually be able to give hope to other people. And my life was to be about believing something bigger than myself and being of service to others.
Wow. So that clicked for you. And then you left there, and I guess your journey obviously continued to the present day. So when you came out of there, did you do anything different than the other six times? Or it was just that aha moment where you could, you know, you believed you could change?
Yeah, really that. So I didn't actually leave that place for a very long time. I ended up managing that treatment center about 3 months into my own personal recovery and then staying there in a myriad of capacities for maybe 2 years or so while entering back in undergrad. But really the magic happened for me while I was there. It was not even when I leave here I'm going to change or begin. It's that this moment begins now, and this change begins now. And yes, I have a lot to learn. I still have a lot to learn in different areas of my life that I'm working on, like the adoption that I mentioned.
Sure.
I've got, you know, all kinds of areas of my life that I'm always trying to improve upon. But, you know, that commitment to serving other people, being humble enough to ask for help, and then never giving up regardless were some of the key ingredients to me being able to sustain that recovery in that moment.
And you did, and then not only did you, you really thrived. So you worked there, and eventually you left, and you got your college degree. Did you go away to college, or did you study at night?
So I've essentially worked full-time since I entered early recovery and started managing that treatment center, and then started undergrad probably about a year and a half into my early recovery, and wrapped that up during the day while working and did a work study. And I've always done about two or three things at a time. And even now, I'm currently getting my MBA, and obviously I get to work at this amazing organization and be a full-time parent. So, yeah.
Good for you. So, obviously, you just said three awesome things, but tell us how, because, you know, you are CEO and president of Young People in Recovery, youngpeopleinrecovery.org, everybody, check it out. Tell us how that came about, and tell us all about your exciting meeting with President Obama, which is so impressive. But if you want to share with us how you got involved in that organization, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was really fortunate to be a part of a small group of amazing young leaders who embarked upon a journey to create this thing to help other people, and that thing is now what we call Young People in Recovery. We really focus on employment, housing, education, and other recovery-related resources. And that really concretely starts to build recovery-ready communities in communities all across the country. And we get to work with some great organizations like the Association of Recovery Schools, and they're building recovery schools all over the place. And that's one great but really small piece of what President Obama spoke to when we were hanging out in Atlanta, and him really reaffirming that this is a public health matter and a continuum of recovery supports has to continually be brought to the forefront of the American people's minds.
Right. And I think what's so great about what you're doing is, again, we've done so many shows of people and they wanted to get sober when they were young, but a lot of times they couldn't connect because there was no young people. You know, they wanted to maybe not go to a bar and party, but all their friends were doing it, so they didn't have a friendship base, and that led them back to, you know, same places, same people, same things. And that's what's so cool about this, because you can jump on to all of these chapters and find other young people and that are doing great things like Justin. And you're married now, you said. You're getting your MBA. You have a beautiful daughter, Everly Hope. You are meeting with the president. So I think that's so, you know, so cool. In, I know you're doing all the other things, education, jobs, which is so needed. But I also think the other piece, and I urge parents to point their children to the website. And if you're young, go to the website. Or if you're anybody, go to the website, because it you never know who you can help or who you can whose life you can actually save. So what is your life like now? What is your, you know, since you still are only 28, give us what your life is like now.
Really, my life is very similarly to those early experiences that I had that consisted of that change happening. And my life is about faith, family, trying to have fun once in a while, and absolutely being of service. You know, just a day in the life of, you know, it was great to be able to, you know, come into the office here in Denver yesterday, which is cool because, like, we have an office now, which it's no longer just my Subaru. And, you know, have some great
in your
calls.
Garage, right?
I know, right? Yeah, yeah, very, very Apple of us.
Uh-huh.
But you know, then we, you know, took off for the rest of the afternoon, sold our first home, and then spent the afternoon at the park with my wife and daughter,
uh-huh.
and then talked to my mom because it was her birthday, and my mom likes having me involved in her life. So
she must be
just
so
one
proud.
Day, you know,
she must be so proud. And what did I want to ask you? Oh, do you have a good relationship with your sister? And you know, the other people in your life, have you made amends with anybody maybe that you've hurt or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my sister's pretty intimidated by me now, but no, I'm just kidding.
So no, it's cool.
And me, and she's like a genius doctor, and she's awesome, and I'll actually see her in Pennsylvania next week.
Good.
But no, I mean, my family is completely restored. Really cool story quickly. My dad actually got into long-term recovery a couple of years after I did. And my dad is a rock star. He's the best
wow.
man at my wedding.
So you were
guy.
The, how cool, you know, you usually hear it the other way around. How cool is that? That is rock
yeah.
star. And was your wife in recovery or did you meet
no.
your wife? No. Okay, so
no,
that's
my
cool.
wife's like just super chill with the whole recovery scene. I mean, I was really nervous to tell her because
mm-hmm.
She's like super gorgeous and like had never
Aww.
Experimented with alcohol or other drugs and like didn't know about this whole world really. And she was just excited to see what God was doing in my life and
uh-huh.
Fell in love with me pretty quickly. So that's cool.
That's cool. How did you meet
yeah.
her? How did you meet her?
We actually met on a big group date. She was actually dating my mentor at the time. I was there with some other girl. But we went to the same church plant together
okay.
and we volunteered together. And I'm very cliche, extreme. We got engaged 7 months, married 7 months later. And we're living the dream and have been married for about 5 years now. So
that's great. That's so cool. And what? Give us a little bit of background in the short time we have left of youngpeopleinrecovery.org and what people can expect if they go to the website and how you can help them.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me have some kind of a just total brag time about the amazing movement that our leaders have created. So when you go to our website, you're going to see a section for supporters. That supporter section is for literally anyone that cares and believes in this movement. So that's parents, moms, dads, sisters, brothers, politicians, business owners, police officers, criminal justice, students, and you do not, to underscore, you do not even have to be in recovery, because when we look at other movements and how we've shifted culture in different movements, when you have the constituency directly involved in creating change, but then when you have other people in the community that also say, you know what, I'm not even in recovery, for this example, but I believe that everyone deserves an opportunity to live towards their maximum potential. Gosh, I mean, I just want to be on board with that. I want to be about that. So it's just as simple as being a supporter, and there's no weird, like, for $9.99 today, join. It's like free.
Right.
Open, we're building a huge constituency of consequence, and we need everyone to really validate the fact that people like me are not rare. There are extraordinary young people in recovery doing the deal everywhere, and we deserve, and they deserve, to have us be their voice if they're not ready to speak up and speak out yet.
Well, it was like Liz Taylor with the AIDS. You know, Liz Taylor didn't have AIDS, but she was such a force. And you know, I agree with that. I think people not in recovery need to come together, too, and speak out and become part of this movement. You know, because it affects, you know, for every person, it affects at least four people. And it's just the humane thing to do, you know. So I think that that's really cool. And what else can they find on the website?
So they can find out if they want to do a little bit more, which is, it's still, again, being a supporter is very important. And that is open to everyone. If they want to get involved with their local chapter, since we have close to or a little over 100 of them now around the country, and get involved with literally creating and facilitating workshops for helping young people leaving treatment or getting into early recovery, get jobs, get a next place to live, maybe go back to school, and they want to volunteer their time, talent, or treasure towards making those chapters exist, they can be a member. And
Justin, I'm going to have to stop you there, but everybody check them out. YoungPeopleInRecovery.org. Justin, we'll have you on again. And thanks for being part of the show.